You are listening to the Passion City Church DC podcast. To learn more about Passion City Church, including our gathering times in Atlanta and Washington, D.C., visit us online at passioncitychurch.com. Today's talk comes from Pastor Ben Stewart.
Well, I was in Texas all of last week, and during the summer in Texas, one of the favorite pastimes when it's hot is to get some friends and to each get in an inner tube and float down the Guadalupe River. And I was had a buddy that was telling me a story about him doing that with a group of friends, that they all got in their little inner tubes and were floating down the river, and then they got a separate inner tube that held their ice chest filled with beer. And so they were heading down the river, just enjoying visiting with each other, lazily floating along, and they didn't even notice they were approaching some rapids. And as they were approaching it, they realized, oh, we weren't quite prepared for this. And one of the girls that had been visiting with them had her back to the rapids. She was talking to her friends, and she realized, oh, I'm in a position where I'm going to go backwards into these rapids. Probably not die, but you could get banged up a little bit. And so she realizes, oh, this is bad. And these guys realize, hey, she's in an insecure situation. And then it dawns on them, wait, she's not ready for this moment. And neither is the beer. The beer's not secure either. And so they run into a crisis. What is about to happen? And in that moment, my friend said he made eye contact with another buddy as he's seeing this burgeoning crisis. And this girl notices them noticing. And so she yells out, help me. And then in a moment, both men assess the situation, briefly make eye contact, and then simultaneously both leap for the beer. And as she descended the rapid, she screamed out, I saw that! And didn't speak to either of them the rest of the trip. Why do I bring this up? For this reason. It's fascinating, nothing like a crisis to show you what you really care about, right? It's in the crisis moment we see, what do you really value? What do you prioritize? If you have to choose in the midst of a drama, which one will you grab for? Which one are you looking to for your source, right? It's why we love the Olympics. The Olympics brings human beings into crisis. And in that crisis moment, you see some people choose the most heroic and redemptive acts in history. It's inspiring to watch the best come out of humanity. And yet also in some of those moments of competition, we see some of the worst, egregious cheating and deception ever. That you've heard the old statement, when you squeeze somebody, you see what comes out of them. And in crisis moments, we get to see what we really value because we see the choices you make. And I bring this up because that's where we are in this text. We're in a crisis moment. Jesus is bringing them to a decision, and he's going to ask people, which direction are you going to go? In the midst of a difficult day, you're either going to run towards self-absorption or you're going to run towards radical self-donation. You're either going to curve in to care about you or you're going to stretch out to care about them. We're at a crossroads in a crisis, and we're going to see which direction we go. And I bring that up because that's where we are as a society, I think. We're at a crossroads. And Jesus is going to challenge us, in the midst of a difficult day, will you live by fear or will you live by faith? Will you be driven by your fears or propelled by faith? And he's going to do it in an interesting moment. So I'm going to set this up and you'll see where he's going. Jesus, in the moment we jumped into, he's having a pretty intense conversation with his people. He's sitting with his disciples and he's saying, hey, this mission that I'm on, it's building a kingdom of God, that the world is broken, but I've come to heal it. The world is in chaos. I've come to build a kingdom where you can flourish if you trust me. He's saying, I've got a mission, and if you get onto this mission, it won't necessarily solve all your problems. It'll create some. That as you proclaim my name to people, there'll be people that reject you. And he says, and they may imprison you. They may bring you before the authorities. And he says in that moment, I don't want you to be scared because the very Spirit of God is going to fill you. And you would expect that he would say, the Spirit will fill you and set you free from prison. But he doesn't say that. He says the Spirit will fill you and tell you what to say while you're in prison. And I'm sure they were thinking, and then get us out of prison? But notice, I don't want you to miss as we jump in, Jesus' perception of himself. He's not just a self-help teacher trying to help you improve your life. He's saying, I have a mission that's worthy of your life. And to be clear, he has a mission, he says, it's worthy of my life. He will die for this purpose set out before us. And then he says, and I want you to do the same. My sacrifice is to procure your salvation, to reunite you to God. But your sacrifice is to proclaim it to a lost and dying world, that God has done something decisive about the brokenness in us. He sent a hero. He sent a healer. He has sent Jesus. He says, and this message will bring opposition, but I want you to not be afraid. Let the Spirit of God fill you and leverage your life for a mission that's worthy of your life. He's saying there's a bigger story here that's worthy of your life. We all want a purpose bigger in us to give ourselves to. And Jesus said, I've got that. It's this. Don't be afraid. Go forward. And yet in the midst of that very intense call, a guy in the back goes, hey, Jesus, tell my brother to give me some money. Just the opposite direction. That Jesus is like, I'm telling you to lay your life down for my mission. And this guy goes, hey, this is an opportunity to get some money. So leverage your life for the glory of Jesus and the good of others, or leverage Jesus for the good of you. And this guy, talk about adventures and missing the point. He just sees an opportunity here. Jesus, give me some money. And you can tell it kind of throws Jesus off. Jesus is like, man, who made me the arbiter between the two of you? And then Jesus decides to make an object lesson, which is a little cold-blooded. Did you notice in the text says, then he turned to them. He looks at the crowd. And he was like, hey, guys, take care. Be aware of every form of greed. That's pretty messed up. But you get the idea that maybe it had caused some confusion in the crowd, that Jesus is teaching about lay your life down. And this guy's like, give me some money. And people in the crowd are like, maybe his brother should give him some money. I don't know. I like money. I'd love someone to give me money. Yeah, I can buy many goods and services. And Jesus is like, whoa, 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 stop. Hey, listen, everybody. Beware. Be careful of every form of greed. And he doesn't just talk about money. He's like, every form. And some of us, we're talking about our possessions, but he's saying, hey, it's not just about money, any form of greed. Some of you are like, well, Ben, I know the love of money is the root of all evil, but I'm a millennial. I got no money to love. So sermon's easy for me. Like, careful. Some of you don't have a lot of money, but man, you jealously guard your likes and your follows. And you go, I don't want money. I just want fame and power. And Jesus is like, be careful. Because a preoccupation with your possessions can derail you from your mission. God made you for something big. Your soul is valuable. It's eternal. Don't spend it on temporal things. But beware, a preoccupation with possessions will derail you from your mission. He says your life's about more than possessions, whether you have a lot or a little. And to illustrate that, he starts to tell this story, a parable. Parable means, it's a combination in Greek of the words para and bole. Bole means to throw. Para means alongside. It's like, I'm trying to make a point. Let me throw this story next to it so you see what I'm talking about. And he tells a story about being aware of the danger of greed. And yet what's so disturbing about the story is how reasonable and rational the man appears in the story. And Jesus starts telling the story about this guy. And as he tells the story, he says, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. So this guy owned land, he owned a region, and in an agrarian context, he had a bumper crop. That's a good thing. Everyone would envy that man. They would even say he was blessed by God. They're like, man, that's freaking awesome. I would love to have a huge crop. And yet that good news creates a dilemma. Now, what do I do with the excess? This guy is experiencing the problem. The more crops we come across, the more problems we see. He's like, oh man, what do I do now with all these crops? He's got a good but real problem. What do I do with the excess? And so in verse 17, he's thought to himself, what shall I do? I have nowhere to store my crops. And he comes up with a solution. He says, I'll do this. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and all my goods. One commentator said this. Thus far, the man is an exemplary model of forward thinking, practical wisdom, and readiness for decisive action. It's not a bad plan. I've got excess. What do? I expand my storage capacity, right? I expand my investment portfolio. So far, everything's good. But then he continues, and I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. So he resolves his problem. I'll store these things, but then notice his direction. He stores these things with a view to self-indulgence and comfort. And he quotes the hedonistic mantra, I will eat, drink, and be merry. Right? And then Jesus ends the story with a shock. All Jesus' stories have a shock. He says, but God says to him, fool, this night your soul's required of you, and the things you've prepared, whose will they be? This is bad, incidentally. You don't want to die and then have the author of life assess your life and go, well, that was kind of dumb. What? Yeah, your whole life, like your decisions, bad choice. Like you don't want to be there. And so you go, what's the guy's problem? Was it wrong that he made a profit? No. Was it wrong that he wanted to save it? No. The Bible celebrates saving. In the Old Testament, it's in Proverbs, it's seen as wisdom. All through the New Testament, we're told it's a godly thing to store up money for the sake of your children and your aging relatives. The Bible celebrates saving. It also celebrates enjoying. You're meant to enjoy brunch. That's fine. But notice, the key language here is in verse 21. Jesus says, and so it will be for the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. The problem's not his profit. The problem is his pursuit. That he says, I'm going to take this and make it about self-indulgence rather than self-donation. I'm going to grab this and make it about me and not about you. And here's the danger. Possessions can disrupt your God-given mission. That earthly possessions can keep you from your heavenly calling in life. That's the problem. The danger of possessions is they distort your perspective and they derail your purpose. That's why he calls them a fool. A fool in the Bible is some, it's a technical term. They lack perspective. They don't acknowledge that God built this world and knows how it runs. And they don't work within his prescribed way of running it. So they think, I can do my actions and experience no consequences. That's foolish. It's amending out critical data. God rules this place, and he has a purpose for this place. And your soul is valuable. It's eternal. Don't aim it towards temporal things. Aim it towards eternal things. And this guy's called a fool. Why? Because that money, those possessions can distort your perspective. What was the distortion? Jesus hinted at it, if you'd missed it, with the pronouns. Did you notice as the guy talked, it was my crops, my barns, my grain, my goods, my soul. You wonder why he was talking to his soul? That's my soul. And Jesus says, you're a fool because tonight your soul will be required of you. Did you catch the verb there? Required of you means what? It was on loan. And I'm calling in the loan. So this guy's like, I own everything. And Jesus is like, that's right. Except life. You borrowed that. I gave it to you. And I gave you your life for a purpose that's bigger than you and worthy of your life. And if you take that life and aim it at temporal things, it's a misappropriation of funds. You missed out on what your life was supposed to be about. It's a bad perspective that you think money gives you autonomy. Money does not give you autonomy, and it doesn't give you authority. It's not something you're meant to use for your own benefit. It's something you're meant to steward for others. So save for others, provide for your family, provide for you. But your life is about more than just the storage of possessions. It's about a mission of the glory of God for the good of humanity. He says, I don't want you to miss out on your big mission because you got distorted by possessions. It's a bad use of life. The earth is the Lord's and all it contains, the world and those who dwell in it, for he founded it upon the seas and he established it upon the waters. It's his and we're meant to be stewards of it. So my kids and I, we just started reading The Hobbit. Harry Potter's done, The Hobbit's in, and we obviously haven't gotten to The Lord of the Rings, but if you've read Lord of the Rings, there's the steward. Do you remember the steward of Gondor? And what's his job? It's to manage the kingdom until the rightful king comes to take his place. What a great job. What an honor. You get to manage a kingdom until the king comes. But what happens? The steward kind of likes being in charge. He likes the chair. He likes the food. He starts to indulge in it. So when the king comes, he doesn't want to see the king. He don't want to hear the king. He doesn't care about the perspectives of the king. He just wants to indulge himself. And as you're reading it, or let's be honest, watching the movies, you dislike him. You're like, what's this guy's problem? You don't own this place. This isn't your kingdom, bro. This isn't your life. You're the steward. You're supposed to steward these resources for the sake of the king. Don't miss the king because you're absorbed with yourself. Oh, I get it. Okay, I get it. I get it. It's a big object lesson. The Bible calls us stewards of resources. We don't, in an absolute sense, own absolutely anything. God does. And he says, I've given you a life. And I've given you a purpose. And I'm going to provide. And I want you to chase it. But be careful. Don't let possessions derail you from your mission. Your soul is valuable. Don't take your eternal soul and just aim it at temporal resources. They're good gifts. They're a bad God. It's interesting. I mentioned here in DC 2 weeks ago about playing board games with my kids, and we started playing Monopoly, which just felt bad as a parent to explain it. They're like, what's the point of the game? And I'm like, well, in your relentless pursuit of wealth, you crush the rest of your family. And then I was like, you know, that just feels bad. So on vacation, we switched to the game of life. I don't remember, played life. Life, you get a job and you get a family and you buy a house and you manage money and then you kind of move along the board of life and life happens to you, right? Which incidentally has changed. When I played life growing up, life was hard. Because you moved along that board, it's like, hey, oops, you lost a kidney, $50,000. Like, oh, a car wreck, your car costs this, oh, your house on fire. It's like, life is a hard place, survive. If you made it to the end with anything, that was amazing. They revamped it. My kids were like, I won the Pulitzer Prize, and like, you wrote a best-selling book. I'm not making this up. Like, everyone ended with millions of dollars. And I was like, kids, life is not teaching you about life. Not all this special. But they're asking me, so what's the point of the game of life? I was like, well, the point of the game of life is whoever gets to the end with the most money wins at life. And I'm like, no, that's called a fool. That you stored up possessions and you're dead. You're made for more than that. So Jesus isn't reaching for your wallet. He's fighting for your heart. He's saying your soul's valuable. Don't spend it on things that are going to fade. That's foolish. We're meant to live for bigger things than this. And it's interesting because America is the most generous nation on the planet. Just a World Giving Index sees that. We live in a generous country. It's amazing. We're number one in that. It's awesome. But there, studies are coming out. Indiana University has a school of philanthropy. They released a report last month called The Giving Environment, Understanding Pre-Pandemic Trends in Charitable Giving. And they noticed, like, America is still on top, but there's a disturbing trend that for the first time in history, less than half of Americans give to charity at all. That's historic. Since they started doing this in the year 2000, it was always in the high 60%. Now we're under 50%. That less than half of Americans give to anybody. And the amount of money all of us give is less. And they said some of this kickstarted during 08 and 09, the recession and difficulty financially, they're like, but the disturbing trend is over the next decade, even as the economy recovered, our generosity didn't. That something about fear has caused us to curve in rather than by faith extend out. And that's a concern for me. It's a concern for us. And again, I don't have any control over where America goes, and I don't really have any control over where you go, but I don't want us to miss what God has for us out of fear. We're meant to live out of faith. And some of you may say, well, Ben, I don't have a problem of how do I build bigger barns? That's not what I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with, am I just gonna survive off a bag of Bisquick this month? I mean, I get this. Some of you are like, that's where I'm at. I don't have this excess to deal with. But I've been thinking all week about the Kennedy Center here in DC, the Kennedy Center. In the 1970s, their gift shop brought in $400,000 a year. $400,000 a year earned by the gift shop at the Kennedy Center, which is great. Only problem was $150,000 a year was being embezzled. That's a problem. Over a quarter of the money is going out the door. And back then, it's the 1970s, they used cash. Many of you in this room aren't familiar with that. It's like this like piece of paper and kind of cloth, and you use them to exchange for goods and services. Cash was all they had in these. Someone was walking off with it. And so it became this problem. Like, dude, somebody is walking off with six figures out of the Kennedy Center. That's messed up because this exists for the furthering of the arts. Everybody here is donating their time. Everyone who works in the gift shop is elderly and they're donating their time because they want to further the arts for society. And someone's pilfering six figures out of it. This is messed up. And so they hired like an investigator to investigate it. And they set up cameras and they start tailing the guys, like the managers. They're like following them home and seeing what they do with the money. And like, and finally this investigator discovers who's taking the money. And so they sit the Kennedy Center down and they're like, we found him. Aha. And they're like, who is it? He's like, it's everybody. He said, it's all y'all. There's no one person. He said, it's the aggregate of almost everyone who works here. He said, some person will be like, oh, the new t-shirts are in. Yoink. Someone else is like, I love this coffee shop. I'm going to give it to my child, right? And someone else was like, oh, I need some money for a cab fare. I only got a little bit. I take a little bit of cash out of here. And they said, it's dispersed around all of you. There's not one big, horrible, mean, selfish person ruining this for everybody. It's all our little tiny acts of selfishness that are taking away from our stated mission, 6 figures worth of funding. And my fear for us as a church is, it's not that there's some bad guy in here, like, let's find him, everybody, get him. Like, that's not the problem. Like, God's purposes are thwarted because of you, sir. Like, that's not the situation we're in. But I think if all of us realize it, a little bit of fear has come in and it's caused us to close in. And if all of us do that, man, we start to shrink back from our stated mission. And my fear is that a lot of funding and a lot of good will get lost. Not because someone in here is a nightmare, but because all of us just backed up a little bit from God's calling in our life. And I want to call you to a bigger story than that. In the midst of a day of crisis, people need to see us live by faith. That we live by a bigger story. We live by a different creed. And here's the greatest thing about this. Jesus is going to challenge us, but here's what I love. He doesn't shame us. The rest of this sermon is not shaming us, like, how dare you? You keeping your money. He doesn't do that. That's Ebenezer Scrooge. That's not the Bible. You remember Christmas Carol? Scrooge is a bad guy. Hoarding all that money, miserly. Won't even give Bob Cratchit a single piece of coal and it's freezing outside. It's messed up. And so what happens? The supernatural world has to jack with this man to get him to loosen up. But do you remember how they do it? It's all shame-based. Look, you had a mentor and you blew him off. How dare you? You had a girl, you could have married her, and you didn't marry her, and now you're going to die, and everyone laughs and doesn't care about you. And he's like, ah, no. And out of shame and fear, he starts giving away money. Don't kill me. Tim, buy a turkey. And it's all this fear-based motivation. The Bible does not do that. Jesus turns the corner and doesn't start shaming them for their fear. He invites them to look up at their father. And he says, I'm calling you to something great, but I'm calling it to you, but let me comfort you first. Before you give anything, you need to receive from me. And it's faith in a heavenly father that will free you to be generous. Isn't that great? The Bible doesn't shame you into action. It loves you into action. When you understand that God is your dad and he loves you, faith in God will free you to be generous. That's the rest of his argument. As he moves through it, he says to his disciples, I'm telling you, don't be anxious about your life. He realizes that beneath a lot of our hoarding of possessions is a fear. Man, if I don't do this, no one's going to take care of me. No one's going to look out for me. I'll be alone. I'll be hurt. We're scared. It's not selfishness. It's scarcity. And he says, don't be anxious about that. What you're going to eat, what you're going to drink, your body, what you'll put on. Your life is more than food. The body more than clothing. He's like, there's a bigger story playing out here. I don't want you to get caught in this little story. There's a bigger one. And he tells him, man, your life, living is about more than having. Don't get caught up in that narrative. Living's about more than having. And you're valuable. That's verse 24. Consider the ravens. They don't sow or reap. They don't have a storehouse, but God feeds them. He says, you're of much greater value than birds. It's interesting. 2 weeks ago when we studied it in Matthew, he just said birds. Now he kind of elevates his illustration to ravens because no one liked ravens. They were the dirty bird that ate on trash and fed on filth. And so he picks the worst bird. Like, no one likes ravens. He's like, God even feeds the ravens. And he likes you way more than them. He's like, so your living is about more than having, and you're valuable. God likes you. He's going to provide for you. You don't have to be scared about that. And then he gets practical and says, and worrying, that's a worthless activity. He says in verse 25, and which of you by being anxious can add a single hour to a span of life? Statistically speaking, worrying doesn't add a single hour to your life. It actually takes some hours off your life, right? Many of us are going to physically live less long because of hypothetical problems in our life. You know that, right? I mean, that's a disturbing trend, that some of us are going to die sooner in real life because of hypothetical problems. And he says, it's not going to add to your life to worry. It's not of benefit to you. And then he says, and then if you're not able to do as small a thing as that, like add to your life, which I love that. That's like some ontological flexing from Jesus. If you can't do, you know, a small thing, like extend your life, you're like, okay, I get it. Because he's like, that's a small thing for me, a small stuff. You can live longer. You can. You, no, not sorry. He says, you can't do that. So all this worrying is not productive for you. Your living's about more than having. You're valuable. This is a waste of your time, and your time's precious. And so trust me. Don't live out of fear. Live out of faith. And that's that last piece where he says, man, look at the lilies. They're not working. But even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass, which is alive in the field today and tomorrow's thrown into oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? He said, it's a faith issue. If you trust me as a father, it'll free you to be generous. He says, so don't seek what you're to eat or what you're to drink or to be worried. He said, the nations seek those things and your father knows you need them. I love it. What he's doing here is calling you to live out your faith. If you don't think there's a God, then none of this argument makes sense. Then you do just eat, drink, and be married because tomorrow you're dying. But if you believe there's a God in heaven that made all this, he has a purpose for all this. And Jesus says he does, and he wants you to live in that purpose. It will fill your soul, and he will provide for you as you pursue him. That's a promise he's making you. And he says, man, when you know God as a heavenly father, that'll free you to be generous. On the flight home this weekend, my daughter, there was a little kid in the seat in front of her, and he was like turning around and like trying to get her attention, make eye contact, like look at her and sort of connect with her. And so she just was watching him do this. And then she grabbed her little backpack, unzipped it, pulled out this big lollipop, and just handed it to him. And I was like, wow, that was unprovoked generosity. What was that? And I don't just tell this story to let you know how awesome my children are, although they really are great. I was looking at him like, what prompted such a selfless act of love? And then I realized, you know, we were at this friend's beach house all week, and my friend told me as we got there, hey, I just want to let you know, I bought your children more candy than I promised they've ever seen in their life. And he did. The pantry was full of it. The freezer was full of it. They ate more candy in 3 days than they've eaten in the rest of their life combined. It was insane. It was completely out of control. And so they realized, I'm fine. There's no candy scarcity. I'm not worried. And that freedom from anxiety just led them to generosity. You get a lollipop. You get a lollipop because I'm not worried about me. I got sugar for days. And that's what Jesus is saying here. God's going to feed you. God's going to clothe you. You live according to his mission and he'll meet your material needs. You seek me and I'll provide for you. That's the promise he offers us. That's the freedom the world doesn't know anything about. And he says, fear not, little flock. Why? Because your father delights. It's his good pleasure to give you the kingdom. He wants to give it to you. And so I love it. He turns the corner then and says, so sell your possessions and give to the needy. Which I love about that because he anticipates that there'll be some people in the crowd that are like, hey, this is all great, but I don't have any money. And I just love that Jesus is like, oh, no, that's fine. Just sell something. And then you'll have the money to give to somebody. Because there's no way out of that. You're like, oh, well, I mean, yeah, I could. Okay. All right. Let me go home. And like, he's gotcha. He's good. No, it's fine. Sell something and then give him money. He says, and you'll get treasures in heaven. And what are the treasures in heaven? I don't have time to unpack all this. I don't think he means like you'll get a bigger mansion when you get up there. What's eternal? The only thing around here that's going to last is the souls of human beings. That's what Jesus is fighting for. Again, he's not fighting for your wallet. He's fighting for your heart. It's like the souls of these people are valuable. So take your possessions, provide for yourself, and then pivot and use your possessions for your God-given mission of the glory of God for the sake of people's lives. And when you get to heaven, there's a celebration around that. I've told the story before, first time I ever went to NASCAR. Only time I ever went to NASCAR. I was at church, and some friends came up afterwards and were like, hey, we got tickets to this NASCAR race. Do you want to go? And I was like, yeah, sure, let's give it a shot. And so we got in the car. There's four of us. And as we're driving there, I asked the girl who had the tickets, hey, how many tickets do we have? And she was like, I don't know, like 100? We're like, what? She's like, yeah, it was like this party that didn't work out, and so they just gave me all these tickets, and we got to do something with them. And the guys in the car were like, let's sell them. We're like, this is awesome. We're going to get rich off these NASCAR people. But then the girl was like, what? No. She said, freely, these have been given to us. And so freely, we must give. And we're like, oh, man. Like, you know, it sounded Bible-y. And we're like, oh. But we get there, and there's like a long line at NASCAR, right? So apparently there's like more people want to get in than there are seats. So you can feel the anxiety just radiating off this line, okay? Lack of certainty. So we walk up to this line, and she walks up, and she was just comes up to someone in the middle of the line, like, hey, how many people you got? I said, like, four. She's like, all right. Breaks off four tickets and hands it to him. And you can see he sees it as suspect. Like, what is this? Some sort of coupon? Like, what do you want from me, woman? And you see, like, he's not buying any of this, but he's waiting in line. What else is he going to do? So he, like, gives one of the tickets to his kid and is like, I don't know, see what that does. And so the kid goes up to the gate, hands it to the agent scans it, lets the kid in. And the kid's looking back at the kid's family with disbelief, like, I'm going to NASCAR, bye, I love you. And off they go. And you see this family's instantly confused, like, what is this? Who are you? Why is this happening? How is this possible? This doesn't make any sense. And they're like tearful and people are hugging her, like, oh my gosh. And so they go into NASCAR and like, bye, thank you. And like, it's this powerful moment. And so instantly, any impulse to get rich is gone out of the rest of us. We're like, dude, this is freaking awesome. And so the rest of the time we're walking on this line, like, hey, how many people you got? Bop, 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 bam, like handing it to people. And then the craziest thing started happening. They started orbiting us. Like, no one was running up to us, like, give me those tickets. But people would just kind of get around us. And we're like, hey, you love NASCAR? I love NASCAR so much. Did you see my airbrush shirt? Did you see my airbrush kid? Like, he's not even wearing a shirt. I just airbrushed him. We love it so much. And we were just handing out tickets. We had a blast. It was like the most fun. It was more fun than watching the cars. But we handed them out to everyone. And then when they were done, we were like, we had our tickets. We're good. So we're like, ah, let's go into NASCAR. But as we were saying bye to these people, we thought literally it was like, bye, have a nice life, see you later. We didn't think about, hey, this is a block of tickets. So we walk into NASCAR and turn the corner, and there's like everyone we let in. And so we walk in and they're like, hey, we're like, ah, like we didn't realize we were throwing like this huge NASCAR party. And then all of a sudden they're like, ah, like raging together at NASCAR. It was thrilling. Why? Because man, rather than hoarding, we were giving. And there's a blessing to that. You're built for that. Now, how was I able to be so generous? Because I knew I was taken care of. I got my tickets, man. I'm getting into NASCAR. I'm good. And he's like, little flock, your father delights to give you a kingdom. You don't got to be scared. He's gonna give you, the world is yours. So don't live in fear anymore. The nations that don't know God do that, but you know him, and not just know him, you know him as a dad. Your daddy's got you. So don't be curled up in fear. Be extended out in faith. Trust him and believe. He's got a purpose for your life that's bigger than just possessions. He's given you a mission that for the glory of God, you would extend to people the grace of Jesus. And as you materially bless them, they might just give their souls to the God who saved yours. Live like that. There's a thrill to that. There's treasure to that. And I don't want you to miss it. So it's interesting. You know, when Don and I were preparing to move here, we left a ministry called Breakaway. Doug, who did awesome during giving, by the way, mentioned that we led a ministry called Breakaway. And as we were transitioning out of Breakaway under great circumstances to come to Passion and move to Atlanta, their parting gift to me was to give money to a Bible translation effort so that a people group that did not have a copy of the scriptures in their heart language could get it. It's one of the coolest gifts anyone ever given me. They're like, we're going to pool our resources, provide a translation of the Bible so people can hear the word of God in their heart language because you exist. It's like super cool. And so we moved to Atlanta and we're preparing to launch. And while we were in Atlanta, the Bible came in the mail. It was this people group in Ethiopia. And it's unbelievable. I can't read a word of it, but it's so cool. And you look in the front and there's the picture of the day they got it and celebrating how cool. I was like, this is awesome. And so we put it on our mantle. We're like, man, this thing's incredible. And we put it on our mantle and we were prepping to launch this. And while we were prepping, someone had mentioned to us a nanny. And so she came to our house. We met this girl and she walked into our house and she's like, hey, it's good to meet you and the kids. And then she looks on our mantle, walks right over, picks this up and goes, why do you have this? Like, what? And she's like, why do you have this? Where did you get this? Why do you have this? And it felt a little like, I didn't steal it. It was a gift. Like, what? Why? And she grabbed it and she was like, this is my people's language. She said, my dad just got this. My dad just got this. Got the word of God in our language, in his language. And she was like, why do you have a copy of this? And I was like, because some poor college kids decided, you know, just one of them leaning in is not going to accomplish much. But if we all lean together, we could see some things change. And I got to tell her about the faithfulness of many who gave above so we could go beyond. And I'm telling you, seeing it connected to a face and a family and a father and a story, you go, there's no greater life than that. Maybe Jesus is on to something when he says your life is about more than food and clothing. It's just about more than that. Your soul's precious. Don't take your eternal soul and aim it at temporal things. Use those temporal things for an eternal purpose. Don't let possessions derail your purpose. And so that's why, and above and beyond, Brennan mentioned it, we're going to give to support Bible translation, that some people groups in the world that don't have a copy of the scriptures in their language will, because of the generosity of you in Atlanta and us here. That's amazing that you might mess up the rest of this month, do nothing of value in August. But if you decide to lean in with us next week and above and beyond, there will be generations of blessing behind you for that. That's a cool thought. And then Brendan mentioned there's some organizations in the city we were partnering in through Love DC in Atlanta. You're doing it through Love Atlanta, where we're looking at organizations that are helping. In DC, we're primarily looking at ones that are helping kids in the inner city get resources to be educated and cared for so they can advance in life. You want to lean in with us? You're going to do that. That not just be a user of the city, but a giver to the city. That's a cool thought. And then Brendan mentioned it. We're launching something called the Future City Initiative. And I'll tell you what it is briefly is, we discovered something as a church that everyone in here knows, that DC real estate is expensive. Surprise. And it moves quickly. And everyone who's ever rented or bought something here knows that. It was shocking to me as a Texan when we came in to rent a house. And the guy was like, do you want this one? We're like, I don't know. Well, think about it. He's like, you better think quick. It's about to sell this hour. Whoop, sorry, he just bought it. I'm like, who are you? What's happening? And you realize DC real estate moves very fast. So it's expensive. It moves fast. And it's available. In unique ways because of the crisis of the last year and a half. And so we realized, you know what? I had a friend tell me this. He was like, you know, Ben, as challenging as the season has been, maybe one of the benefits is you could get sown deeper into the fabric of DC than ever before. That the reality is that the lack of autonomy over a physical space has in some ways impeded our ministry, that we are not able to have Passion Kids in Bloom right now. We've had all kinds of challenges with community groups. Many of you are asking that, and you're like, because we rent all these spaces and there's challenges with it. And we may be renters for a while, but we're looking at this opportunity to sign some long-term leases or some opportunities to purchase. But what we've discovered is they all go really fast. And so we wanted to have a property to show you, but literally every property that, as we've gotten real estate agents and architects in, every property has been gone in less than a week. Like, oh, look at this neat. Nope. Okay. All right. Oh, look at this. Nope. All right. And we realize like they just all go really fast. Opportunities around this building. If we stay here, opportunities around this, opportunities just down the road. So we love staying at the Howard. We'll be here for a while, but that there's opportunities to expand ministry, but you just have to have a down payment for that. We don't. The good news is, you know, a couple of years ago, the folks in Atlanta, you gave above your operating expenses to go beyond to a new city. And Brendan mentioned it earlier, we're sitting in the beyond. This church exists because of the faithfulness of that crew on the other side of that screen. It's pretty awesome. Pretty cool. Here's the other cool thing. We now pay our own bills. That's right, son. Yeah, we are self-sustaining here in DC. We made it, all right? And kids are growing up and just making decisions. It's so great. So we can sustain this. But we don't think God's called us to just sustaining. He's called us to advance. Yeah. And as we look at opportunities in front of us, we're like, well, we're going to have to pool up some resources to have a down payment ready to expand kids' space, opportunities to serve in the city, things like that. So we'll have more details in the world ahead, but we just want to know for this above and beyond, we're asking, we're going to serve the world, we're going to serve our city, and then can we pool up some resources so by the grace of God, we could make a move on a space that we could use for the community. And we want to do that. And so that's coming, and thank you for everyone that's leaned in to make that possible and is going to lean in next week. And I'm just excited about the possibilities God has as we decide to just go a different way. The world is worried, but we know our Father so we can have faith. That's the life you want to live. That behind me is not a wake of people I stepped on. Behind me is a wake of people I blessed because I exist. But let me encourage you again. Before you give anything, you need to receive first. That Jesus says our generosity is fueled and resourced and prompted by the generosity of a Father, who when he saw our brokenness, he didn't recoil. He sent his precious Son. And Jesus embraced all manner of inconvenience for us. He didn't have to, but he said, this mission is worth my life, and I will lay down my life to absorb your sin, to absorb your shame, to absorb your brokenness, to take it on the cross, that he who knew no sin became sin for us. He was buried in the grave. And then he rose victorious. Your sin, your shame, your mistakes don't need to define your future. But faith can define your future. And I want to give you a new heart and put my very spirit inside you, that he will move you to obey my decrees, that you can be released from the tyranny of fear and propelled by the fuel of faith to live a life with a wake of blessing behind you. Zacchaeus was a man that was curled up in his love for money. But when Jesus came to him with generosity and kindness, Zechariah said, well, then I want to leverage my gifts and my possessions for the souls in my city. So friend, before we ask for any money from you next week, we want you to know the grace of Jesus Christ. That's what we want, more than anything else, that you'd know him. Because our Savior has the power to add not just an hour to your life, but add eternity to it. In the presence of a Father who loves you, in the presence of a King who wants to give you the kingdom with the freedom we long for, there's a purpose available in Jesus that is worthy of your life. Don't miss it. You've got a mission. And it starts by saying yes to the King.
If you were encouraged by today's talk, be sure to rate us and hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you stream your podcasts. To experience other talks, videos, and live gatherings, visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com or download the Passion Movement app. And again, thanks for listening to the Passion City Church DC podcast.